Good to be with you this evening. I hope that something I've prepared to speak to you this evening will be beneficial to you in some way, and we can be uplifted and edified by our time here this evening. We're going to talk about Psalm 34 this evening, and realistically, the contents of the psalm itself is not that much different than what we've seen in a bunch of the other psalms, but the header to the psalm is a very fascinating story, and I want to dive into the context of what David's experiencing and the things that he's going through leading up to the writing of this psalm. So it's titled, A Psalm of David When He Changed His Behavior Before Abimelech, Who Drove Him Away and He Departed. Probably one of the most detailed explanations for a psalm that exists. I didn't check that, but it sounds about like it. The story that it is referencing is in 1 Samuel 21, and it's always been a very strange one to me. A few points about the situation David's in. The end of chapter 20 of 1 Samuel is his talk with Jonathan, the meeting with Jonathan in the field when Jonathan shoots the arrows and tells him, essentially, my father's going to kill you if you come back, so you need to leave. He'd already been in some amount of trouble with Saul. Saul was already had tried to kill him a couple of times, but not to the extent that Jonathan is saying, now is the time. He's going to actually try to kill you now. He's going to send people after you. So David flees. He goes on, they part ways, and he goes and he finds Ahimelech, the priest. Not Abimelech, Ahimelech. He left so fast, seemingly, that he has very little to his name. No food, no weapons, nothing that he can really call his own at the time. And Ahimelech gives him the showbread that is being taken off the tables to replace before the Lord him and the men that are with him. And he asks if Ahimelech has a weapon. And in return, he is given the sword of Goliath of Gath, the giant that he had slain earlier in his life. I'm bad with words tonight. I'm sorry. But all of this is what's going on as we're leading up to his meeting with, as the title of this psalm is, Abimelech, but as we will see, he is referenced in 1 Samuel as Achish. Another note about this psalm itself is that this is the second of what is referred to as the alphabetical psalms, each verse beginning consecutively with a letter of the Hebrew alphabet, and apparently this one is not exact, but it is very close. So it matches that style. But I want to go into 1 Samuel 21 because I think it's very important for us to understand the context of this psalm if we're going to look at it accurately. So I want to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 21. We'll read verses 10 through 15. 1 Samuel 21 verses 10 through 15 says, Then David arose and fled that day from before Saul and went to Achish the king of Gath. And the servants of Achish said to him, Is this not David, the king of the land? Did they not sing of him to one another in dances, saying, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s? Now David took these words to heart, and he was very much afraid of Achish, the king of Gath, so he changed his behavior before them, pretended madness in their hands, scratched on the doors of the gate, and let his saliva fall down on his beard. Then Achish said to his servants, Look, you see the man is insane. Why have you brought him to me? Have I needed madmen that you have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house? So again, a very, very strange situation. One, it has always been strange to me that David would even consider, while holding the sword of Goliath, walk into the city of Gath. It's never made much sense to me. The only reason that I can come up with is that in fleeing from Saul, he says the only place Saul won't go is where the Philistines are, because he's already been scared of them of them in the past. So he goes to the king of Gath, the king of the Philistines, and tries to make his way there. The other is that the knowledge of David has gone far and wide. It's not just Israel that knows about him. It's not just Judah. The knowledge of who David is has gone throughout the land. To the fact that even though his own people would not consider him king, that's who Achish refers to him as. He refers to him as the king. And that he has this greater power than Saul. And he sees it as that. And because of his knowledge of David and because of this situation, David attempts to hide who he is. He attempts to hide that appearance of being this great man of valor, because as long as he's not a man of valor, they won't worry about him as much. At least that's how it seems. Now, if you want to see a little bit more of why this is such a big deal in 1 Samuel 17, that's where Goliath from Gath is standing before David, and David again being the reason for the defeat and the man who killed the champion of the Philistines. So, now that we see all of this, I want you to look at this and I want to ask the question, how would you feel to walk into a place where you have been the reason for someone's downfall and walk into their own kingdom in their own place seeking refuge? How would you feel when they suddenly realize who you are? If you think about it in the business sense, what if for some reason you were running a company and there was another company that was a rival to yours, and you completely took over everything of that sector, you know all the clients, you've got all the business, and they go under. And then you walk into their office and they know who you are. It's not going to be a comfortable situation. We're not fighting giants now, but the same kind of concept is around still. Our enemy is out there. We know it. If we walk into the camp of the enemy and they turn on us, what are you going to do? So I want to look at David's kind of, I guess, response to this whole situation by reading Psalm 34. Psalm 34, start in verse 1, it says, I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make its boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear of it and be glad. O magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord, and he heard me, and delivered me from all my fears. They looked to him and were radiant, and their faces were not ashamed. This poor man cried out, and the Lord heard him, and saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps all around those who fear him, and delivers them. O taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who trusts in him. O fear the Lord, you his saints. There is no want to those who fear him. The young lions lack and suffer hunger, but those who seek the Lord shall not lack any good thing. Come, you children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Who is the man that desires life and loves many days, that he may see good? Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their cry. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. The righteous cry out, and the Lord hears, and delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord is near to those who have a broken heart, and saves such as have a contrite spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers them out of them all. He guards all his bones, not one of them is broken. Evil shall slay the wicked, and those who hate the righteous shall be condemned. The Lord redeems the soul of his servants, and none of those who trust in him shall be condemned. So just looking at this psalm, there's a lot of deliverance message. There's a lot of praising God for what he's done for him already. You know, David has already at this point been anointed as king. He's already been given that promise of being the king of Israel, of having that throne that would continue. And he hasn't seen much of it. He's running for his life from the man he has served, from the man he has stood in his court. He spent all this time, and then what he turns to is essentially just praise. He praises God. He praises God for deliverance. He praises God for the peace, for the comfort that comes from him. He praises God for the great blessings that he knows that he can have through God. He gives instruction. He gives some encouragement. He points people to find God, to look to him, to grow in his word and in his knowledge. And finally, he talks about the assurance that is given to those who trust God, to those who find their way to him and serve him. I want to look at another couple of people who suffered shame in front of others and their response. In Acts chapter 5, verses 41 through 42, it says, "So they departed from the presence of the council, rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for his name. And daily in the temple and in every house, they did not cease teaching and preaching Jesus as the Christ." I was looking through some verses and trying to find things that fit with this story and kind of understanding this concept of where David was and what he's coming out of. And when I saw this, it kind of surprised me because I wasn't even considering this as part of what was going on. But it's interesting to think about the experience of shame. You know, the apostles were beaten, and they were ridiculed by the leaders of their own country, of their own people. And they departed, rejoicing. They were rejoicing. They still went forward praising God. And we can see that response in David, that despite all the things that he went through, despite the trouble that he must have gone through and the feeling that he must have had, he still turned to praising God. That was his response. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 16 through 18, it says, "Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. In everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ for you." In everything give thanks. I think that's one of the biggest things that I've learned from studying the Psalms. David's response is thanksgiving. David's response is praise and glory to the one who made him, to one who gave him the promises, to the one who brought him through all these troubles. In everything, give thanks. It doesn't matter what's going on. We always have things to be thankful for. We always have something that we can count as a blessing for our lives. If nothing else, we have this body, the church, a greater blessing than we could ask for. In verses 8 through 14, he turns to more of instruction and encouragement to serve the Lord, to look to him and to grow in him. In 1 John 1, verses 1 through 4, it says, "That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked upon and our hands have handled concerning the word of life, life was manifested, and we have seen and bear witness and declare to you that eternal life, which was with the Father and was manifested to us, that which we have seen and heard, we declare to you, that you also may have fellowship with us. And truly our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. And these things we write to you, that your joy may be full." David had seen a lot. He'd gone through a lot, even at this point. You know, when he goes to face Goliath, his response is that The Lord delivered me from the bear and from the lion. He delivered them into my hand. Why wouldn't he deliver the Philistine? And that same response is continued in this psalm. That the things that he had seen, the things that he had experienced, those are the things he's trying to push others to do and to serve. Now, you may have noticed in Psalm 34, I believe it's in verse 12, that it talks about deceit and lying lips being against the Lord. And considering the situation that David was in and the fact that he essentially deceived Achish to get to the point that he was, it seems like a strange response. That's his answer to the situation. And I don't know that I can tell you whether what David did was right or not. There's no immediate response from God telling us that it's wrong, but there's nothing telling us it's right either. And I think from the scriptures we can see that deceit in general is not right. The response that he has in the psalm also seems to indicate this, that he realizes that deceit is not right in the sight of God. As I was looking through this, and to be honest, I'm still confused about this, and I asked my dad and Barry both before services, I don't know what this means. Where are we going with this? Because I don't really understand why this seems to be allowed. It seems to be just let go. But I was looking at Matthew Henry's commentary on this passage, and he made the statement, he says, for the statement in Psalm 34, he says, these excellent directions in a way to life and good are transcribed into the New Testament and made part of our gospel duty. And that's in 1 Peter chapter 3, and there's several references in 1 Peter chapter 3 to this psalm. It says, and perhaps David, in warning us that we speak no guile, reflects upon his own sin and changing his behavior. Those that truly repent of what they have done amiss will warn others to take heed of doing likewise. And maybe this is what David is doing. He's realized the mistake. He's realized that he didn't, in his actions, fully trust the Lord. That he didn't give that trust that he is trying to tell others about to get him through the situation. And while I would love to think that that's the reason and that's the way that this psalm is being written, it's very confusing to me that then later David goes back to Achish and we see a similar thing, a similar situation unfold again. And we'll look at that in a minute because I want to continue with the story and continue with what happens with David after this. But like I mentioned, this passage is referenced quite heavily in 1 Peter chapter 3, talking about what we are supposed to do as servants of God. Proverbs 18 and verse 21 says, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. There's a lot of things that our speech can do. The words that we choose and the way that we use them can build people up, it can tear people down. And it can do a lot to either increase our service to God, to bring others to God, or to convince people that we aren't worth it, that God's not worth it, that there is no reason to ever follow the Lord that we serve. Finally, in this passage, in verses 15 through 22, David talks about this assurance. This knowledge of God and this knowledge of the hope through God. The promises that are received and the gifts that are given through true service to God. In Acts chapter 12, verses 5 through 7, it says, Peter was therefore kept in prison, but constant prayer was offered to God for him by the church. And when Herod was about to bring him out that night, Peter was sleeping, bound with two chains between two soldiers. And the guards before the door were keeping the prison. Now behold, an angel of the Lord stood by him, and a light shone in the prison, and he struck Peter on the side and raised him up, saying, "Arise quickly," and his chains fell off his hands. The promises that were given to the apostles was that they would be able to go through a great many tribulations. Christ tells them that they're going to be able to handle a lot of things. But in this case, Peter was being kept in prison. There's not a whole lot you can do once you're kept in prison. But the whole church was praying for him. And the Lord delivered him from that. He sent an angel to deliver Peter from that prison, to bring him out and to bring him back to the brethren. And we see several examples of this throughout the New Testament. Examples of hope for us. To know that our God has the power to change things. To free the captives. To make changes in people's lives. To bring them out of bondage. And not just the physical bondage, but the spiritual bondage. That we know that we have a God who cares. That we know we have a God who is faithful to what He has promised. And Peter writes in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 18 through 21, he says, "Knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. He indeed was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifest in these last times for you, who through him believe in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God." I want to take these concepts and this information that we've seen in the psalm and look at how David either does or does not use them through a little bit more of the history that he has with Achish. Because we see these things and we see that the thoughts that he had right after his feigning madness. But I want to look at what happens after this and the trust that he had in God continuing and being fulfilled. In 1 Samuel chapter 27, he returns to Achish. Even after all of this, there's several years where he goes through running from Saul. I believe both of the examples where he comes into very close contact with Saul are during this time. In fact, at the end of chapter 26, it ends up at that point where he is standing beside Saul with the spear in his hand. It could have killed him right then, and he didn't. But he feels like he'll be caught by Saul unless he fully leaves, unless he completely gets out of Israel, not anywhere close. Again, a very similar situation of concern as he had the first time he goes to Achish in Gath. So he goes with his 600 men that he's now collected, his warriors that are with him, and Achish gives him a city to live in. Very different response from Achish than what he had seen before. He kind of accepts him and assumes that he's fully defected from Saul. And this is where I said that it sounds a bit like David's gone back to what he was doing before, because he treats this city as a raiding post against the other inhabitants of the land, against Amalek and against some of the other nations that are around. But he tells Achish that he's raiding Israel. He tells Achish that he's fighting against Judah and against Israel, and he convinces Achish that he's completely turned against his home. In 1 Samuel 28 and 29, we see the Philistines themselves, Achish and his men, going to war against Israel. And Achish decides that David's a good man and a good warrior, and he's going to take him with him. And he sets it up with him as his own personal bodyguard around him. And as they go toward setting everything up and going toward battle, the princes completely refused. I think they had a little bit better of a handle on what David was doing than Achish himself. And so David leaves the Philistine army and returns to his town of Ziklag, being invaded by Amalek. His wives and the wives of his soldiers are all taken captive, and most of their things are gone. So in 1 Samuel 30 and 31, he recovers the women and belongings, and then he sends gifts of the things that he receives to Judah, to the elders of Judah from the spoils as an act of diplomacy, kind of regaining his trust with those that he would have counted friends or leaders previously. And this is the fight where the Philistines destroy the house of Saul. The Israelites lose the battle very quickly, and Saul and all of his sons fall to the sword. So definitely best that David was not there, because it wouldn't have been something that he could have taken part in, and as he showed in previous situations. But I want you to take all of this and consider the man that David was, and the admonition that he gives. You know, he wasn't perfect. He made mistakes. He did things that didn't make sense. But at the end of the day, what he chose to do and what he chose to make his priority was serving God in everything. He knew the Lord was faithful. He knew the Lord would give him the promise that he had made. He knew that he would receive the kingdom. And he just continued to do what he could to take care of his family and the families around him as he dealt with Saul continuously chasing him. So at the end of the day, even though he may have made some mistakes, and even though he may have acted in deception to this Philistine king, he still wrote things that we can learn from and grow from. There's a lot to take from the Psalms and run with. We know that God is faithful. We know that He will do what He has promised. You know, even though David may have fallen from the path, he was still given the kingdom, and it wasn't that long after this whole worked out that he eventually was able to claim that throne. We've been offered a home. We've been offered a chance. We've been often offered forgiveness for when we mess up, for when we do things that are against God. You know, David was referred to as a man after God's own heart. And I think you can see that by the writing of the Psalms and by his response to things, because it was with repentance when he failed. I hope that if you're struggling with your spiritual health tonight, that you will be repentant. That you'll find your way back to the one who gave you life. That you'll turn from whatever you're facing, from whatever sin it you're involved in. That you can find that ability to turn back to God. If you've never made the choice to follow him in the first place, I ask you to very much consider it. The Lord has given us promises beyond anything that anyone in this world can promise. And I hope that you will make the decision to follow God, whether that is in baptism, starting your walk with Christ, or whether that is in requesting the prayers of the church to handle the struggles of this life. If you would need the prayers of the church or the help of the church this evening, we ask you to come forward and have a seat on the front pew as we stand and sing.